Welcome to the Development Locker podcast, the podcast designed specifically for aspiring academy football players and their development. I'm your host, Lee Wood, and I'm thrilled to have you join us on this exciting journey. Whether you're a young talent dreaming of making it to the top, a dedicated coach looking for expert insights, or a parent seeking information into how to guide your son along their journey, this podcast is your ultimate resource for everything related to academy football. Each episode will bring you exclusive interviews with renowned coaches, former academy players who have successfully made the transition to professional football, and industry experts who will share their invaluable knowledge and tips to help you excel on and off the pitch. Over the next 48 episodes, we'll be diving deep into the mental and physical conditioning, the various aspects of player development, nutrition, injury prevention, and maintaining a balanced lifestyle to ensure you reach your full potential. We'll also discuss what to do when your dreams come to an end, whenever that may be, along the journey, with insight from those who have gone through this part of the journey and come out the other side a better person. Also, we'll be joined by those who support people like you when, and not if, that day comes when football isn't the only dream you want to pursue. But it's not just about the technicalities of the game. We'll also explore the mindset and mentality required to thrive in a competitive world of academy football. We'll discuss the importance of resilience, self-belief, and effective goal setting to help you overcome challenges and achieve your dreams. So, whether you're looking for guidance on improving your technical abilities, seeking advice on navigating the trials and tribulations of the academy system, or simply want to stay motivated and inspired, we're here to support you every step of the way. Get ready to learn, grow, and be inspired by the stories of those who have walked the same path you're on right now. Together, we'll unlock the secrets to success and help you gain that crucial edge in your academy journey, as well as prepare you for that alternative pathway. So, grab your boots, put on your headphones, and get ready to take your game to the next level. This is your podcast, and I'm thrilled to have you join us as we bring you your interview from the locker. Stay tuned for our weekly episodes, which we'll bring you every Monday morning, and we look forward to you joining us then. Welcome to the Development Locker podcast, the show that takes you on a journey of self-discovery, personal growth, and development. In today's episode, we're discussing the liberating world of self-awareness and the art of putting yourself first and the sheer joy of embracing your authentic self. We live in a fast-paced world that often pulls us in multiple directions, leaving little time for self-care. But in this episode, we're breaking free from the hustle and inviting you to explore the beauty of self-awareness. Discover the incredible power of knowing who you are, understanding your emotions, and unlocking your true potential. We'll tackle the notion of putting yourself first. Some may view it as selfish, but we're here to challenge that notion. We believe that prioritizing your well-being is not only essential, but a cornerstone of leading a fulfilling life. So let's learn together how to set healthy boundaries, practice self-compassion, and make self-care a non-negotiable aspect of our daily routines. Finally, we'll explore the pure delight of embracing your authentic self. We all have unique qualities and quirks that make us who we are, and it's time to celebrate them. Say goodbye to self-doubt and self-criticism as we dive into the journey of self-acceptance and love yourself for all that you are. Throughout this episode, we'll be joined by Simon Rogers, who has experienced transformative personal growth through self-awareness, prioritizing the needs of the players that he works with, and embracing their true selves along the way. His story and insights will inspire you to take your first steps towards living life that aligns with your values and passions. So get ready to embark on an empowering adventure of self-discovery and self-love. It's time to break free from the shackles of self-doubt and embrace the unique, incredible individual that you are. Before we begin, don't forget to hit that follow button so you never miss an episode that could change your life for the better. And if you find value in our discussions today, share this episode with your teammates, friends, and family. Because self-awareness and self-love are gifts meant to be shared. So, put 60 minutes aside, invest in yourself as we're about to explore what drives you, learn how to put the right fuel in, and what direction to put in your navigation system as we bring you this week's interview from the locker. Welcome everyone to another episode of the podcast, and we're in some very good company. There's only a handful, probably not even a handful, two or three individuals we've had back on the podcast. It's season four and we're very lucky and fortunate to have Simon back on. So Simon, you should know the score by now. We start off with a why, and the question I want to ask you is, why is a shared passion important in achieving high performance?
Well, you know, to be honest, it depends. And I'll add some context as to why that's my initial answer of it depends. Because it depends if it's, firstly, it genuinely is a shared passion, in the sense that let's talk about a young person who has the dream of becoming a professional footballer. Now, there's many, millions, in fact, young people who seemingly have that dream. But I wonder how many, and I would definitely include myself in this, this is why I'm bringing this up, when I was 11, 12, 13, did I really consider if it was what I truly, truly, truly wanted? Like, what was it? Like, you know, if I realized that my life was only, you know, one shot at it, is it what I really wanted? And I don't think I had fully considered that. I just loved playing. And so I don't know if it was absolutely all I wanted to do. I didn't even think about it. So from that point, you know, for it to genuinely be a shared passion, it's the person who's passionate initially is responsibility to start that off, you know, to say if it's a shared passion. Because in the absence of that, what can happen is that people that are really close to you step in, and they might have unfulfilled dreams or ambitions, and they can live them out through you. I mean, I'm sure every parent will recognize this, you know, that there's this almost desire for anything that you have not fulfilled in your life, that you're not sure if it's a passion and desire for yourself. Sometimes we can live them out to a degree through our children. I've got a two-year-old son, who will be two in September, and I can already feel that urge in little things. It doesn't matter, like if it's a career through football, or if it's just, I don't know, buying ice cream, you know, whatever it can be. You know, that sometimes there is that urge, and I don't think we need to feel guilty about it, but I do think we need to be aware of it. And so that's one of the reasons I brought that into the conversation, like straight off the bat, if you like. But in terms of the other way of shared passion, you can also think about it as football is a team sport. So for you to live out your dreams and to be successful, you're going to have to share a passion, right? You're going to have to share a passion, a joint dream. And I think that's what, if you look at the managers like Arteta and Guardiola, and many of the top managers, they all do that. They make that really clear that everybody's on board, really succinctly, really clearly, really transparently with what actually individually drives, but collectively. So you have a common goal. And so then the natural passion within each individual is fueling you towards that common goal. So there is a great example of how essentially, by doing the work from the example before, sets you up for high performance in terms of a collective goal that it has to be because it's a team sport.
Yeah, and you mentioned that about a shared passion, and you mentioned about your experiences with him, football and academy football, and it's you see it in selected isolated cases now where, and it's wrong of me to judge, but sometimes, I mean, I never got to your level, or certainly the players who are in the academy system now, but you all almost sometimes question whether there is a passion there and whether it is as not shared, but maybe as matched as it may be for their coach, maybe for their parent, maybe for another family member, teammates, or the pressures that come from school being known as an academy player. It's it's interesting you say that, because I think sometimes maybe that passion isn't there, or maybe it dwindles as they go through the system, and you know, they lose that fun, they lose the love for something that they would do morning, noon and night. It's yeah, it's interesting you say that.
Yeah, I totally see that, and I can understand that from my own experience. I did lose the passion for it as soon as it became something that, from my experience, was just about rigor and routine, and that I lost the joy in it fundamentally. So I do think that every individual to not only be successful but actually enjoy it, because I know there are plenty of professionals that have made it. You know, as academy players, you'd be looking up at them and saying, well, you've made it, but they don't enjoy it. I know there are plenty that don't enjoy it, and they just go through the rigors of it. And so if you do want to be successful and you want to enjoy it, I think you do need to get that clear. You need to get clear of why you're doing it. You know, is it because of the identity of being, you know, some way of connecting with other people because you're popular, because you're a talented young footballer? Or is it something more than that? There's not a right or wrong answer, but you do need to be clear on it. And I think that the academy system, to a degree, by default, it weeds that out to a degree. But it's really about, I think, a proactive confrontation of it, you know, in a kind way. You know, not to judge the outside behaviour, but to actually help people to understand the inner dynamics of that. I do think you have to go really deep for that, because you have to understand way beyond the noise in your head, the emotions going through your body, the identities that you're holding that you may be invisible to, you know, that can be unconscious. You have to go deeper than that to really understand, like, I know it sounds a bit fluffy, but what your heart really desires from this life. What do you really want to do? What do you feel lit up by? And if you do that, I think you get the highest level of performance, because you can push yourself way beyond any other level, because you're fueled by the passion and the joy of the experience. So it's not fear-based. And then you notice that you've got a really rock-solid foundation for your well-being, as well as a huge reservoir resource to push yourself to your absolute limit and therefore get yourself to your high performance.
Yeah. What do you do in that situation where, because it must happen, did you see it in your time during the academy system, or do you see it now when you work with academy players and those involved in the academy in this country, where a certain player or a certain individual is probably either more passionate, or they're in a team where players, individuals are not as passionate as them? What do you do in that? So put it into a player's perspective. Mm-hmm. They're in a team of X amount of individuals, but yet they're the most passionate, or they're questioning probably, or looking at other people and thinking, oh, you're not as passionate as I am. You don't love this as much as I do. You don't want this as much as I do. What does a player do in that situation?
That's great, because there's a couple of assumptions potentially in that. That your passion is something you can only see ultimately through external expression, like how you're acting, how you're talking, how you're showing up, right? Which is, there's a large degree of truth to that. But as we are growing as individuals, you know, some people are more introverted, And so those people, they may have a huge reservoir of passion, yet they need to be supporting their development to be able to express that, whether that's in just their body language and their how they speak, and also how they show up on a football pitch. And I think there's a journey in that, particularly for these individuals to be able to do that. So we always talk about don't judge a book by its cover, right? And that applies for both sides of that spectrum, if you wanted to kind of draw, you know, lines between extroversion and introversion. But everybody's on the spectrum with that. And so, you know, when we, when I'm working with a young player, I do my absolute best not to judge them based on their behavior and their performance. And we've spoken before about development before assessment, right? And basically starting from like a non-judgmental mindset, meeting them where they're at and helping them to see themselves, because they're so used to being assessed. Young players constantly assessed. But to bring out and express your own passion, that's not done by somebody else, right? So even if it's another player trying to draw it out of you, ultimately it's down to the individual's awareness and permission to go, yeah, I'm going to show up that way. So it always has to be an internal viewpoint. Yeah, they have to look inside themselves and notice how they're feeling and what's driving them, because it's the only way it's sustainable. Otherwise, you need to be constantly managed. So say like a captain of the team, you know, might be, let's say, typically more extrovert. And they see somebody who's, you know, they've not been able to reset themselves after doing making a mistake on them. They've given the ball away and the team scored a goal. Well, you might see that they drop their head or something like that, and you could assume that, oh, they're not as passionate. They can't reset themselves. But in that situation, in a real team sport, you know, the captain can actually understand that, right, okay, well, what is required for this individual to support them to come back and find their passion? Maybe they know them better than to judge their behavior in that moment and not manage them, say like, come on, you need to just like get your head up and go, but support them to get out of that. And there's a lot that we can do to proactively condition that, train that in, and also in language and lots of things and lots of skills. And that's a big passion of mine, is that emotional agility training.
Yeah, you're right in that question. There's a lot of assumptions, but I think also those assumptions are sometimes real. And, yeah, you know, you do hear players who question other people's motivations, passions, you know, whether they want it enough. It is a dog-eat-dog industry, rightly or wrongly. That's how it is sometimes, and that's how it manifests itself. You know, group dynamics is already... within any group, there's a natural born leader, there's somebody who's, you know, motivator and all the different characteristics within that. And it's interesting. And there are assumptions. And I think a lot of the times people make those incorrect assumptions of, oh, they don't want it because they're not really showing passion. It's like, well, I think you said about it before, is it genuine? Well, people can play the game and show or appear to show passion to kind of put that mask on, as it were, and to identify as somebody different, where other people can be as passionate, but they're quiet and reserved in that way. And it's wrong, isn't it? We're all human. We're all flawed. We all sometimes make assumptions. We judge people by their cover. Like you said about the book analogy there, it's scary sometimes, because I think we do pigeonhole and perceive other people's actions to be not as passionate as ours. And we're completely wrong in making that assumption, aren't we?
It's not necessarily like it's wrong. It's just that it's a point where you can go further. So like a true leader in that sense, if you want to grow in leadership skills, is, yeah, you can make an assessment, but then don't stop with that as an assessment and then make that judgment and make that is the reality, that is the way it is, and convincing everybody else of it. But actually, true leadership in that situation might assess the situation, use their emotional intelligence, and then see what they can do to assist and help. See, like that, using that empathy and really leaning in doesn't mean that assessment is correct or incorrect. It just means it's a point of reference to facilitate them to be a real team player, to really be a captain, to really be a leader, you see. And so then we see that there's connection happening across the team, rather than, you know, a star or somebody better or somebody less than, because it's never about the individual. It's always about the collective. It's because it's a team sport. People can shine in their qualities, and they can grow in their qualities if they engage in this process and become better as a consequence of that, rather than be, you know, preoccupied with, you know, where somebody else is and where they are. And I appreciate it's really hard for academy football. It becomes more of a, you know, and it is always dog eat dog. But I do think that if you really focus on your own development and you work on your own development in this way, by being a team player, that you ultimately have a totally different experience of your whole career. I think it's a great foundation to focus on, because as I said, there are plenty of professional footballers that just see it as a job, and they're very cynical about football and say, you know, like, fans aren't really, it's not really a club and it's not really a community. It's just, you just come here because your dad came here and your dad came here and it's a vice for you or whatever it is, which, you know, it may be the reality for some people, but for a lot of people, it really is a place as well, where they get inspiration from their life and they get genuine enjoyment, and, you know, they can live a feeling of connection through the team and all sorts of things that football is a magical place for. But it does require more players also to you know, really live a joyful career, a really fulfilled career. And it starts with these little things, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree. And you mentioned joyful there.
Mm.
In terms of being good to yourself, I've seen a quote of you that's attributed to you recently. That's a kind of a statement, a quote, a mantra that you've put out in the public domain, being good to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean by this, and how does it look in reality? So taking a young professional player, how can they be good to themselves? How does this look, and in reality, what can they do to be good to themselves, to get that joy, to maybe reinvigorate that passion or to maintain that passion?
So I think this starts with self-awareness, like really understanding kind of where we started with this conversation of, you know, what do you really want? What if you had one chance of this, and you need to get clear on like where you're heading, right? Let's say, you know, if you set your navigation wrong to the wrong destination, then, you know, there's no chance that you're going to get there. And so you need to set your vision. You need to set your vision on like, what do you really want? And you can adjust it slightly over the way, but you've got to have a really clear sense of what, you know, what do you really want as an individual? What do you want to experience? Is it within football, first of all? And if it is, what is it within football? What is your version of success? And that, the only way of knowing that is through self-awareness, because nobody else can tell you that. So you've got to be aware of, you know, what drives you. And that's not simple, because in this world where there is so much outside of you to take your attention, most of us live in a world where our head is frazzled and we're overwhelmed, whether it's we admit it or we don't. That's a reality for more or less everybody. So the only way to get a sense of peace in that is to face that reality and experience, how do you master quieting down to get a sense of peace in it? And beyond that, you get to sense more of your vision and what lights you up, what you really genuinely enjoy. If you cannot do that, then you cannot notice your vision. You cannot notice what you enjoy. You cannot be good to yourself, because being good to yourself requires you to do what genuinely deep down fulfills you. You got to know what that is. And then, you know, a lot of the other things become less relevant, right? You don't have to navigate all of other potential challenges as much. They don't stick in your way and become absolute obstacles. They become just challenges for you to really solidify, you know, a really genuine inbuilt resilience, a way to deal with the adversity. And it becomes an inbuilt confidence, you know, that is really robust, not like rigid, but flexible, malleable. So you can show up being you the whole time. So you build that foundation of real enjoyment fueling you. So that works on well-being and high performance at the same time. So that is, for me, that's the ultimate of being good to yourself, is genuinely, honestly, ruthlessly, you know, going for what you really want deep down. And if that's the case, you'll see that people will, that will see that in you, and they'll support you in it as well. Well, that's the amazing thing about that joint vision. They'll genuinely support you with it in an unagendered way when it's genuinely your dream.
Is there a limit to that? Can you be too good to yourself, or is that just not possible? There's no ceiling for you to break through in that regard.
I think when you really get clear about your vision and what you love doing, you realize that it becomes about others, but you have to put yourself first. You have to genuinely accept what drives you and what fulfills you. And then you realize that that is very others focused. you'll see that in some of the players. I always this mantra that your humility must exceed your ability. Right? Your humility must exceed your ability. And you'll see that with some of the most confident people, like very, very confident, that it's an aura they have about themselves. And it's not arrogance. There's a very clear sense that you get, right, this is just genuine rock solid confidence, and it's not arrogance. And they've got to that point where they've realized the truth about it, which is, I think, just a fundamental truth in life, is that when you really get clear on what you want, you realize that it's very others focused, and you put yourself first in it. And it's this weird kind of paradigm shift in some ways, that you realize what fulfills you is bringing that joy to other people, but it starts with you. And I don't know how else to put it that other than that so fluffily at the moment, but maybe you can help me out, Lee.
Yeah, I mean, when you put it like that, I think it does start with self. But I think as a human being, I think sometimes, I know we were speaking off camera, as it were, before we started recording this episode, of I think sometimes we're scared to say, oh, I'm going to take a bit of selfish time. I'm going to be selfish. I'm going to think of me. I think we live in a society where that's a negative connotation a lot of the time. To be selfish, a lot of people will view, maybe incorrectly. Again, it's an individual thing of going, all right, it's about you. But the fact you're saying that is about you, and we know that in the academy system, it's a team environment. And I mentioned it's dog eat dog. That's probably a very negative connotation, but it is. And you're in a team environment, but it's not a team contract that's handed out at the end of that age group, the end of that registration, your end of your apprenticeship into the professional ranks. It's an individual contract for an individual player. So you have to think of yourself. And I think going back to what you were saying about high performance and the individual contribution to the team effort, if you do think yourself and you get yourself right, that can only positively contribute into that team environment, the team culture, and ultimately team performance in sport. So, yeah, I think we're scared as humans to be able to say that publicly, but whether you are or not, I agree with you. I think it does have to start with yourself, because if you're not right, then, like, you know, we were going back to the passion bit, how can you expect other people to, you know, kind of behave in a certain way, and to be of sound mind, to be motivated and all the rest. It does start with you. I think we're slowly changing that, and I think that's good. And I think it's people like yourself who will be changing that mindset, not just within individuals, but within organizations as well. And I think changing people's opinions brings me on to my next question. And we find ourselves kind of a little bit in between off season and now pre-season, depending whether you're involved in academy football at what level, and whether you're a young professional entering into the first team environment for the first time in your career. But you see a lot of lads on social media who are, you know, there's no days off, the hard work starts here. In your opinion, is that showing good passion? Is that looking after themselves and being selfish? Is that a goal-orientated mentality? Or for you, in your experience, is that a precursor for burnout? Or you mentioned there about the external pressures. Is that them living up to what maybe others want to see them as?
Yeah, I mean, it depends, and only the individual knows that. I would say that, you know, there is, when we talk about burnout, ultimately, that is an absence of soul energy, if you like, you know, driving your being, you know, and when you feel drained to that degree, yeah, I think you do need to question, like, what are you doing? Why are you doing it? What's driving you? In those cases, there will be a degree of fear. So it doesn't mean that you're not heading in the right direction. It just means you're putting the wrong fuel in, you know, and you might need to rediscover, keep going in your journey potentially, but you do need to realize what really drives you, what is really fueling you. And it could be just a case of, you know, reconnecting with where you started and what you loved about it and feeling that. And I think that's one of the biggest things that often we repress, because you get energy from things by feeling. You don't get energy from thoughts, you get energy from feeling. And it kind of comes back to the point you just mentioned, Lee, that I do think it's very common, particularly as men, certainly in the UK, and definitely in sport and absolutely in football, that we don't, there's these narratives that stop us feeling. Big boys don't cry and all this stuff, but also a case of men have to be providers and all of these identities that are kind of invisible that usually fuel us and say, no, we've got to put our children first, sacrifice all these things and all sorts of stuff that we don't sometimes realize that isn't absolutely true or isn't the healthiest way to see it that works in every circumstance. So I think that, you know, when you're just pushing, look at where you're pushing from. You know, is it genuinely other people's voices in your head? Because if it is, that creates fear. It creates a sensational experience in your body that what you're doing is not enough. Right, is the judgment basically that's invisibly being placed, that you're placing on yourself. And then it can spark some action, but it's going to need to be followed up again with a message of like, are you doing enough or whatever? And remembering somebody else's voice in your head to keep that going. But if you keep doing that as your drive, and you might not even hear those voices anymore that you're telling yourself, then you can lead to burnout and you have to just find lots more drives. But that's motivation. If you find inspiration is being filled up with an energy of, yeah, I love this. I'm fueled by this. It doesn't mean you're working any less. In fact, it means you can work harder. But it's looking at where you're fueling yourself from. So I think that's probably like the key thing. And, you know, much of the work I do working with individuals is not necessarily judging it on the outside and seeing where somebody's going. For example, I was working with somebody last week and they are 16 and they are not in an academy at the moment currently. They were training at lots of different academies and they want to take a step up into men's football because they think that's the next step for them in terms of their football development journey. They absolutely have the dream of becoming a professional footballer. Yeah. And they were having trials at a semi-professional level for men's football, and we started from about a year ago where they'd lost the joy of football. They just lost it. Still performing at a very high level, but they honestly looked at themselves and, you know, I'm just not enjoying it anymore. But I still feel that there's something in me that's drawing me to go. I need to keep going. Need to, you know, commit myself to this path forward. And when we look deeply at it, it was still absolutely their dream, still absolutely theirs. Nobody around them was saying it was like contributing to that is their dream. So that's quite a vulnerable state now because you're not necessarily in a club, but it is your dream and you're 16, right? That's vulnerability because, you know, there's that probability is lessening by the week.
Yeah.
And they're going into pre-season. So we had a conversation just last week. And part of my job is to challenge them when they make a plan for themselves, because it's always their idea. Self-awareness is the key. to challenge them if they're facing their fears, because it's not about fears driving them. It's got to be what they genuinely want, what matters to them, what's their joy. And they said to me, no, I don't think I'm going to go for the semi-pro one. I'm actually going to work at a good level, amateur level, going into men's football. I'm going to make that transition and I'm going to evaluate it in 6 months. And I was like, well, there's part of me in my head listening as a coach going, well, is this the best step? Are you challenging yourself enough here? And I just shared that with him. I asked him about it. Like, well, you know, my job here is also to challenge you, to hold you accountable to your dream. So with that perspective and what you're doing, do you genuinely think that's the right step for you? We thought it. He spoke you through and he's listening to himself. He developed a huge amount of emotional intelligence and agility in the work that we've done together. And he said, yes, Simon, yeah, this is absolutely what I want to do. Should we arrange a check-in like then? And, you know, and we're going to evaluate it as it goes. But this is my plan. I thought, wow, you know, on the surface of things, you think, are you going to get to where your outcome? But he's got enough trust in himself, in his own ability to turn his path, that he knows this is actually my next step. And I'll evaluate it. And I know that that will let me build up that self-awareness. I keep the self-awareness, because if I go to that next level, it's that step beyond where, yes, I'm challenging myself, but I don't know if I can trust myself not to go into, I'm just not enjoying it anymore. And I take a step back because I'm committed to going forward, but I don't want to have a block in my momentum. So he's managing his own development. Now, how amazing is that?
Yeah, it's like, it's, I think, you know, we talked about it again off camera again, of that art of conversation. I think the only way of drawing that out and getting that engagement from a player is, you know, you're brilliant at the art of conversation and really asking some probing questions to do that. And it's, yeah, and there's a bit there I took out of that, and it's an impossible question to answer. It's down to the individual, but do we challenge ourselves enough? Do we operate in our comfort zone? Do some of us challenge ourselves too much and, you know, bite off more than we can chew type of syndrome? It's certainly a lot of food for thought, and it resonates within academy football. Every player, probably from under 12s, under 13s up, you know, you do any type of goal setting session, right? What's your target? I want to be pro. And you think, okay, at 16, 18's level, you know, again, it's down to the individual. Yeah, that's potentially achievable, you know, within a certain time frame. If you're in under 12s, under 13s, there's a big jump between that and where you're going. And then you also get the philosophical individuals who'll be like, yeah, I just, you know, you're wise beyond their years of, yeah, I just want to be happy in what I'm doing. And you think, oof, yeah, you're way ahead of your time and you're way ahead of me. And yeah, I'm the wrong side of 40. So it's interesting in that. And I think the conversation to draw that out and to really delve deep into those targets of what they want to achieve, you know, what their drive is. I think that's the beauty in it, really. And I think with players specifically, I think that's what needed. I don't think there's enough time within academy football, in life in general, is they were all at 1,000 miles an hour using technology and not really having face-to-face conversations anymore. But I think, yeah, it's a lost art, that one. And I think we mentioned their players, and we talked about, you know, potentially burnout, you know, no days off and all the rest of it. And it's a critical time for the season for players and parents. And parents, I know, are often forgotten about, are often not the programs, the support networks that we all put in place are not always tailored to them. And I get it, you know, it's the players, they're the vulnerable ones who we have duty of care for, but kind of shifting focus slightly onto the parents. They've got a tough season ahead, another tough season ahead. Some parents will be entering it there for their 7th, 8th, 9th season. Some will not know what academy football looks like, or being an academy parent is actually going to kind of roll out to be over the next coming weeks, months, and maybe a year, maybe even two. How do parents avoid burnout in their stresses, in their support of their son's passion? Is there a way that parents can be a little bit selfish in a good way, and, you know, kind of make sure that they're not falling into the same trap that potentially their son may do in the academy journey?
Oh, definitely. I mean, it's in some ways it's a different dynamic and that can be more challenging as a parent from my perspective and from learning from working with my clients, and I work closely then with the parents then, because it's a team effort. And you know, the parents are living through every step, kick, pass, move, every minute of the game with them. You know, their heart is on their sleeve, like watching them, but they don't have the benefit of being able to influence that and move around and express it in the way that they, you know, that their son or daughter does that. So in some ways they're, you know, might be standing there or sitting there in a stand and or watching from, you know, over in an indoor center, and it requires a huge amount of self-awareness, I think, for a parent, not only of being able to hold a space for your child, essentially, you know, of helping them understand themselves and what they want and what they are driving for, and also all of the, you know, all the adversity that they face. Like they throw these young people, they throw themselves into an environment where they are accepting on a daily basis, far more common than that, adversity, and they have to in order to grow, right? That's just part of the process. But with that, we are human beings, and every time we experience adversity, fear will pop up. It will, you know, that's just natural. That's just part, in natural part of the process. And how we navigate those experiences, you know, is really important. We can either face it, feel it, let it go, as I share in my process, and do that consciously, and then it's gone, and we're in a flow. Or what happens, which will happen in various degrees, because there's no way of doing it perfectly, we're all growing in it and we need to, is that we repress some stuff, we compartmentalize. And so that's left there as potentials that get released out into bursts of anger, or you don't even know what it's about, or that the parents are then there to receive and not take personally as well, which is also really hard because the same thing is happening inside of them, you know? So it's really hard. It's really challenging. And I think to be a parent of somebody who is in elite sport and in that developmental journey, I think it takes and requests a huge amount of self-awareness, emotional intelligence, emotional agility, vulnerability, commitment, a huge amount. And it's really tough. It's really, really tough. And as you say, in the dog eat dog world, sometimes they can feel a little bit separate. I think more can be done to support them, to help them feel a part of a community, however long they stay in it. You know, yeah. I do think that that's the case. And I think massive amounts has been done for that. And there's only so much resources available to do it currently. But I do think that's a really important part of the puzzle, if you like, to really include the parents and support them to be as supportive as they can. And you know, they need to know how that they can grow, because there's no perfect parent. None of us get a manual, and definitely don't get a manual to how to be with somebody who's going into elite sport. You know, that's another manual on top of parenting. So you know, we're all looking to learn and be the best version of ourselves for the sake of the children that we're supporting, and to be honest, also because it helps us grow. And I think if you can face that, then there's a massive amount that you can grow from, because not only is the young person consented to be in an environment of extreme potential of growth, but naturally then, you know, the parents are in that same environment as well.
Yeah, and my follow-up question to that is, for those parents who their son has left the academy system, being released last season, or find themselves in between clubs, in between opportunities to get back into the academy system, or they're going back down into grassroots. I think it was on your website about the acceptance being the first step to resetting. Are these two things separate entities, components, is accept, you know, talk us through how acceptance is the first step to resetting, because I think a lot of players and parents will be going through those emotions now. You're saying about, you know, the feelings and empathy. Do they need to accept it before they can move on and reset and go again, and how does that work?
Well, what I tried to do with the model is make it super accessible, in terms of, if you focus on the internal experience, that is the quickest way to reset. So you don't actually have to focus on resetting. You actually want to acknowledge what is actually happening. And that's what I mean by acceptance. So I don't know if you, maybe a visual is quite useful for this, but you could almost like draw a pyramid. You imagined a pyramid, and you took that pyramid and you divided it into different layers. So you've got four layers to it. And the top of that peak of the pyramid, that first triangle, you could say is like physical. So all the things that you experience physically. And then just below that, you'd say mental is the label. Is this making sense as a visualization?
It's making perfect sense. And I remember from your last episode, you're very good at visualization. So carry on.
So we've got the physical, we've got the mental, and beneath that, we've got the emotional. And then beneath that, whatever you want to call it, in whatever term you want to call it, I just call it spiritual. So it doesn't necessarily mean belief system. It just means a part of you, a beingness of you, that's able to get perspective on all the rest of it. So that's the very base of the pyramid. So there is a part of you, whatever you call it, that's able to get perspective and be with not only physical, mental, emotional, all of it together. And I think we all recognize a part of us that's able to do that. So when we're talking about acceptance, really it's about acknowledging yourself, like deeply yourself. And I really think that's accessible in any moment. In fact, that's exactly what I train all my clients to be able to do. In a split second, and the wake-up call is usually some sort of mistake or something. They missed a header or they missed a ball or something. And suddenly they can reset. But not by focusing on, no, I just need to go again. The go again is a deep process that can be playful and light and straight into action. So that acceptance gives you perspective to let go of what you're feeling, to gain perspective on what you're thinking. So no longer is that a content that's holding in your head, bothering you, and you have to reframe it, but it's gone, like a split second gone. And I think that's absolutely trainable. So you've got face it, acknowledge actually yourself. When your head's gone, that's the reset moment. That's the opportunity to reset. So you face it, you feel it, you let it go. That's naturally what happens when you accept. And then you get to high performance. You get to a flow that's not pushing against something that you're trying to, you know, reset against. It's a natural, I enjoy being me. So no longer is the fear of having to reset the thing that's getting you back into action, but it's actually the joy of being you. That's more sustainable, and it gets you to higher level of performance. So I suppose the quote in that is, fear can focus you, but it can't fuel you. What needs to fuel you is your genuine passion, your joy of, and your love of playing football. That's what needs to fuel you.
Yeah, I mean, that visual and the, you know, the slogan of, you know, face it, feel it, let it go. I think a few people, parents as well as players, struggle to accept sometimes the decision. Yes. And I love the internal viewpoint of it as well. I think going back to the basics of psychology, isn't it? Control the controllables. You can't control someone else's decision, their opinion, their choice, the way they're going to, you know, whether you get retained, released, you get game time, you get picked, you get deselected, you don't. I think we can only control what we do. And internally, if you look within, you know, I love that about the, you know, the internal of, you know, the experiences that you view and that you've enjoyed along the journey, rather than the external of like, well, the last thing I remember is being released, which is obviously an external thing and obviously going to be difficult to accept.
Yes.
Whereas if you look within and you accept, yeah, I was at that club academy for 2 years. Yes, I made friends. Yes, I traveled to this tournament, this, you know, European country. I've now got lifelong friends. I've been able to, you know, improve as a player. I was able to get access to psychology, nutrition, all the different bits that come with being part of, you know, the academy journey. And yes, if you can look from within and take all of those, surely by default, it's easy to accept and then move on, reset. Yeah. And, you know, my terminology might be incorrect. I'm pretty sure it is, but then go again, whether that is into grassroots, playing on the park with your mates, going back into the academy system, moving on to semi-professional, wherever your pathway may be. Mm. It's surely got to be easier to look within yourself and go, what have I gained from that experience? Rather than like, can't accept they've not picked me, they've picked that other player, I'm better than he is, I should be there, they shouldn't be there. And all the, I suppose we all do it in life, don't we? We chart our success externally, going, oh, am I better than that other person on social media? Or, oh, is our house better than theirs next door across the road? It must be a human trait, and it's easy to do. And I think that looking in, internal, I think if anybody listen to this, player or parent, takes anything, I think that's got to be probably one of the biggest messages. In terms of them, before we finish off, I know you're very passionate about player care. I know we've connected via or indirectly through you know, the player care group and the fantastic course that they do.
Yes.
And you've been reconnecting with those people and that group of individuals. So what are your aspirations for the year, you know, in terms of where we last spoke to you last season, season three? Is there anything that's coming up, something different from a player care provision that, you know, you feel that either needs to be highlighted or something that you're working on in the background that you think could be a game changer within player care?
Yeah, I do. I think that player care as a department can be, and I think I mentioned it last time, it can be something that can really glue together all the other departments and getting them firing as a high performance team. Because, of course, that's what we do when we're supporting, the coaches are doing, everybody's doing player care, medical, recruitment, even bringing people in, is ultimately to support the individuals to develop. And that requires a high performance from that facilitating team. And I think that a big area in player care, obviously, you know, we're taught by Hugo and the rest of the team, Miguel and Sue from the player care group, that, you know, the basic foundation of that is those three pillars, the operational side of the welfare and the personal development side. I think there's a part in here that's very niche in terms of what my services offer. In that emotional agility training, it's very much in those three pillars. It's absolutely, you know, personal development and a touch on that welfare. But I think it's something that's proactive. So much of the work that we want to do is we want to shift it over to be proactive, so there's less to do reactive, right? That's a big kind of mantra within player care in general, in terms of improving and developing a measurement for anything in the department of player care in our industry. So I think there's a piece here that we can be, that's almost invisible, that can be so much more proactive, where we empower the individuals to become so much more self-aware of their emotions and what's driving them, and having clarity on that. So they actually are able to, when it comes to retain and release periods, they are far more conscious of knowing what's right. They can accept, as we just spoke about, with far more clarity. They're actually able to take learnings along the way. So then we're talking about coachability. So that affects then their coaching department. How coachable are they? Are they being disruptive influence on the group at times, or are they sulking, or are they not showing up? They're all emotional issues. They're all parts where there's a lack of acceptance emotionally from those individuals. So there's stuff that that can be done proactively, whether that's, you know, directly from the work that I do in terms of my services, whether that's a workshop or that's working in on a program or in a group program. But it also can be, I think, with coaches as well. And I've got lots of people that I'm speaking to in recruitment as well, they go, wow, there's some navigational or transitional points in that journey of selecting somebody and getting them, you know, into that team, that to help them feel settled and actually part of that age group is quite a journey. It's quite a challenge to get in there, and to do that vulnerably, openly, and be coachable and to really make that progression. Because a lot of the players in that team will be going, well, you're coming in because you're taking my place. So there's that dog-eat-dog kind of mentality that comes up. But is that always conducive to collectively and individually being open to being developed? Sometimes that makes you a little bit more rigid. So I'm kind of painting a picture across a number of different departments, if you like, and I could even go into medical as well, and also sports psychology, where it all links together with this work of really supporting the individuals to have a foundation of really understanding themselves, navigate points of adversity, transitions proactively before it gets to aftercare when there is release. And also is building a foundation not only for that kind of welfare side of it or personal development for route into other parts of football, even a career outside of it, but also making them a better player. That's the funny thing is it's not, we often see the help them grow as a player and we help them grow as a person, and we hope that the person helps to grow the player. It absolutely does. It absolutely helps them grow as a player, because the person is the one that is being open to all of these moments of growth and how they accept them and how they, you know, because there's pains of rejection that are happening there. And the quicker you face those rejections or feedbacks of like, this could be done better, the quicker you see an opportunity to grow. So your coachability and your development goes in a far more, it happens a lot quicker. So I know I scattered a lot of different perspectives around, but just to see opportunities of where it can fit in within an academy setting. Does that help?
Yeah, I mean, opportunity, you know, we're talking there about looking within and viewing what you've had along that journey, whether it's one season, 10 seasons in academy football or anywhere in between. And I think the opportunities that are provided to players, parents, us as staff, you know, is immense. I think what you mentioned there are multiple opportunities. And I think going back as well to your point about conversations, you know, the opportunity to talk through these things and being able to have a plan and be proactive and, you know, have that, the building of foundations for life after football, for the rest of our lives. Yes. We all have a unique opportunity, whether, like I said, we're staff, parent or player, to be able to do some wonderful things and to reinvigorate people and to give them drivers to maintain their passion, to increase their passion, maybe even, you know, a little bit more than what they are, to lead that successful life. I know there's different forms of success, but, you know, successful life in whatever it is they choose and however they want to attribute that being a success or not. And that leads us beautifully onto the final question. Same as always, words of wisdom from you, because you're very good with words of wisdom. Any inspirational quotes, any bits of enlightenment you can give our listeners before we finish this episode? It can be football related, life related, academy related, or just as an individual human being. How would you like to end the episode?
Well, it's kind of thinking through what we've spoken about, and I think one phrase that kind of encapsulates it would be, fear can focus you, but it can't fuel you. So you need to understand yourself to know what is fueling you consistently, sustainably. So get clear on that. And I think that, you know, that helps you enormously with everything else that we've spoken about.
Well, I can agree with that. Fear certainly focuses me. Sometimes when, yeah, I miss that deadline, or when, yeah, I'm under the cosh at work and fearful of not being able to do what I need to do, it certainly focuses me. And hopefully, well, I'm saying it hopefully, in a weird way, I hope that, you know, the people listening to this, players and parents, will have the right amount of fear to focus them and to, you know, for them to seize those opportunities that will present them over the coming weeks and months as the season kicks in and gets to full speed and intensity. And as always, I'd love to, it's my, you know, opportunity to thank you for your time, Simon. I know you're an extremely busy person. I know you've only just appeared on the podcast last season, but you're more than willing to jump on, and it's a pleasure to have you on. As I'm sure, you know, if our listeners could speak through the microphone, they would thank you as well for your time and your words of wisdom. And they really are words of wisdom, the way you articulate some of the things. And it's the best people are always the ones who can simplify things. And with your imagery and with some of the phrases that you've given over the last 60 minutes, I know that people will be taking plenty from this episode. So thank you.
Oh, it's just a privilege. It's just a great, I love being able to share. There we go. Share a passion, Lee. And so, yeah, it's because of your passion and what you're doing as well that that we're having this conversation. So it's, thank you for the opportunity. It's been brilliant.
And that brings us to an end of another episode of the podcast. Just three things I'd like to highlight from this week's episode that Simon spoke so passionately about. One, setting your navigation to the wrong direction. How many of you will aim to achieve a professional contract, but how few of you will actually achieve it? Bear that in mind when you're setting your targets and you're entering the destination into your navigation system. Secondly, what really drives you? We often hear a lot of players talk about that professional contract and all the things that come with it, but it could be something totally different that drives you. But even if it is the contract, the money, the fame, the status, the pride of achieving a professional deal, there's no harm in that. But the second question would be, how much do you want it? Thirdly, this episode could be a wake-up call to you enjoying being you. Remember, we're all different. We all have different dreams. We all have different aspirations, a range of emotions, and we all lead different lives. And there you have it. You can find out more about today's guest on their website. Check out their social media platforms for more of what we discussed today, all of which you can find in the bio of this week's episode. Reach out and continue the conversation towards taking ownership of your own personal development and unlocking your potential on and off the pitch. If you haven't already, make sure you hit the follow button on our podcast, as well as follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, as well as connect with us via LinkedIn to provide us with your feedback on this episode and suggest ones for in the future. As always, be sure to share this episode with your teammates, friends, parents, coaches, and whoever else you feel will benefit from this. Until next time, when we bring you another interview from the locker.